graduated from Duke as an undergraduate, no one, absolutely no one, had a 4.0. There was none. Well, look at Clemson now. Look at look how many 4.0s there are, zillions. None. And, you know, I think making everybody an A student so everybody feels good and thinks they're learning something is detrimental to the program and to the students. And they ought to keep the standards high. So, but that's been a lifelong battle with me. So, I would ask for increasing the rigor of all programs.
Fair enough. So you were pretty instrumental in the School of Computing coming about. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well, my original idea for it and design was we were motivated by, we had a infamous department meeting where the provost came and said to us, and quite deservedly so, you guys aren't doing enough. You're not publishing enough in top quality places, and you're not bringing in enough money, and you need to get going, and you need a plan. And so I agreed with. And so I came up with a plan, and the plan was, I was looking at how others were advancing computing throughout the United States, and I thought the model at Georgia Tech, which largely due to a friend of mine, Peter Freeman, was really interesting. They had a college of computing, because computing interacted, applied to, was intricately involved with all of the disciplines. And so they had a college of computing. And I said, well, I wonder if we could pull off something like that. So I was originally discussing that, but back then Clemson, it was interesting, Clemson went from 9 colleges down to 4 colleges at one time. And the reasoning being saving money, but money wasn't saved by doing that. It was just shell game. Anyway, it went from 9 colleges down to 4 colleges. And now we're back to 9 colleges at Clemson, of course. And but at the time, there was a pressure to keep the number of colleges down. And so getting a College of Computing approved was more than I was able to pull off. But I was able to convince people to get it at a next level, to make it a School of Computing that had divisions within it that were essentially departments, with my grand long scheme plan being that the school turned into a college and the divisions turned into departments. And that hasn't happened yet today, but you know, that was the plan. So in the original design, I thought, well, we obviously want applications to all divisions. So what we would like is art and science, and, you know, computing in art, computing in science, computing in engineering, and computing in business, that is IT systems. And so I proposed, in effect, departments or divisions in all those directions, and that we would hire faculty to fill. And so some of that actually happened. We actually we got a school, and we got divisions in the school, but it hasn't completely filled my original hopes for it.
So obviously there's the MFA program, but outside of that program, how do you see this interdisciplinary work playing out within the School of Computing?
Well, it's happening within the division. So there's a another division is human-centered computing division that in effect application to social environmental issues. Oops, hold on a second, shut this off. And so they're doing some, and they've had lots of interaction with various departments like the School of Nursing and various social science programs. And there's a lot of activity there as well. So that's one that's worked out. I would very much have liked to have seen a business IT division. It hasn't happened yet. And I would like to, the computer engineering is a separate department in my way of thinking. Part of a college of computing would be a natural home for it, but again, there's historical reasons for the computer engineering being separate from computer science, mostly because they came up separately. So administrative changes would be necessary for all of it, but I think more divisions within additional divisions within the school disciplinary work quite a bit. Without that, I don't know that I see lots more of them coming on, but the ones we have are good.
Seems like maybe not just within certain colleges or from certain schools, but at Clemson in general, things like the Watt Center and creative inquiry classes are kind of working towards that interdisciplinary goal. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't, I didn't, and I don't keep up with what all's going on there. I mean, I'm largely focused on graduate programs when I was there, with the exception of the undergraduate focus was on the technique. The reason the name technique came in is the Greek word for art, and it's also the root of technology, so science. So it's a blend of the two, and that's the origin of that phrase. The technique program was my most extensive venture into the undergraduate program, and I really spent most of my time working on the graduate program with all the graduate students and graduate courses and doing research. So I didn't really keep up with what all's going on in creative inquiry and the like, but if it's interdisciplinary and maintains high standards, I'm all for it.
Fair enough. So you were involved in creating the computer science PhD programs, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it had been officially approved just before I walked in the door, and
Okay.
so I had I didn't have the first PhD student at Clemson, but one of the first ones, and he's still a professor, and it so I'm an active participant in supporting that program. As I said, I had I think it was nine. I don't remember if it was 9 or 10. You can look at my CV. 9 or 10. Well, no, it isn't spelled out which is which there. Anyway, 9 or 10 PhD students. And they all did some terrific stuff, and so I'm pleased with their contributions, and they've gone on to have students themselves, and so it's nice. And for the courses, the courses in the program, absolutely, I had a lot to do with that. With proposing the courses that we teach in the PhD program and what's required in the PhD program. Sure, I took an active role in that, but as I said, the CHE approval, which is no small feat, that was accomplished before I got here.
Okay. So what would you say, since you got your graduate degree in computer science versus today, what do you think is some of the most important changes in the field that you've seen?
Oh, it's so much wider open now. I mean, it's so, the opportunities are so grand because computing is in everything. You know, I saw an article. I'd have to dig it out to give you the exact numbers, but an article that not long ago, that something like 70% of the top paying jobs, new jobs in the United States, require an ability to write code. And, you know, that's the way it's going. And so I think the current news flashes and all the hype over AI are way overdone. Having done a fair amount of AI stuff myself, I can tell you that's overhyped right at the moment. But there are contributions there. It's just the hype is far outrun the reality. But the opportunities are just so wide open that with a PhD, you don't have to, it's not like the old days where you had to study architecture or operating systems or programming languages or the like. Your PhD in computer science can be essentially focused in an application area of your choice, and that opens up everything, opens up the world. So
I haven't asked anyone specifically about AI in these interviews, but they keep coming up. Since it came up organically, I will ask you about your thoughts on the media coverage, I guess, of AI applications right now.
Well, it's way overblown. I mean, it's come about because the systems are very, very good at recognizing input and categorizing it as one of a finite number of outputs. So the software that's driving cars, all right, that so it can drive cars, it can fly airplanes. In fact, people argue, oh, they can't drive cars yet. Yes, they can. They just, people object to them because every now and then there's a crash from a Tesla system or something. Well, yeah, but compare the Tesla's driving ability to the average person's driving ability. I mean, the average person is a way worse driver than the average Tesla. So they can do lots of things like that, fly airplanes. And for a long time, pilots are just sitting there in case there's an unusual emergency. What the pilots now just taxi to the end of the runway, hit a switch, and it takes off by itself, flies itself, lands itself, and then they taxi it into place. The pilots don't actually steer anything. And cars are going to soon be the same way. But see, that's very different from intelligence. That's recognizing and taking things and taking action. And those systems are based on, typically classifications that are derived from, you may hear the term neural net or neural network a lot in these things. Well, a neural network is nothing, I wrote a number of papers on those, and it's nothing more than a system that takes in a lot of data and then finds an objective function for categorizing things. So think of it as, what slot does your marble run into if you drop it on a hill? And it drops it and makes the hills for you so that you can drop a marble in there and it goes into the correct bucket, down the hill into the correct bucket. So it's what's called gradient descent on a discovered objective function. And that's all that's going on with it. And what's become new and big is that in the olden days with neural nets, you didn't have many neurons. And today, because of graphics processors, you have way more computing power and you can have way, way more neurons in your neural net. And with more of them, you get a way better function and way better recognition. So an example of the computing difference, if you look at a typical central processing unit in a computer, a CPU from Intel or AMD, you'll see in the olden days, it was a big deal to have a quad core CPU. Well, if you look at them recently, some of them are up to now, 10 or 12 cores in the CPU. I have a graphics card in my machine right over there that has 10,000 cores. Okay, not 10 or 12, 10,000.
Oh my.
And the 10,000 cores can all work. They don't have to do graphics. They can all work on a computing problem in parallel. And I do that. And that's the way the neural nets work. They have 10,000 cores, but that's a small graphics card. The new ones that are coming in put lots and lots of these graphics cards together. So they have zillions of these cores all working in parallel, and they can, in effect, find really good solutions to recognition problems. So you can, the way you train these things, of course, is you say, here's a picture, and the right answer is stop sign. Or here's a picture, and the right answer is that's a person, hit the brakes. Or that's a dog in the road, hit the brakes. And so you give it all these, here's the input, here's the correct output, here's the input, here's the correct output. And then anything that's close in the same universe as the inputs that you've been showing it, it's going to get the right output. And that's what's new and different about neural nets, is that with way more cores, they can do way, way better recognition. And so all of that is hyped up since, I think, largely because of the self-driving autos is what got it started, but applications to other things are coming along too. But that it's going to solve all the problems of the world is just silly. It isn't. Neither of my sons is in computing, and they ask about why I do computing, why is that? And I said, well, computing and mathematics is way easier than social science, because there, I may not know what the answer to my problem is, but I know there's an answer. It's out there somewhere. I might be able to find it. At least I know there's an answer. With social problems, I don't know that there's an answer. Sometimes there's no answer. And so that's a way harder environment. And so, one son is a social work and the other's an MD. And those are harder. Those are way harder fields than computing and mathematics.
I see what you're saying, but as someone who really struggles with math.
Well, but the fact that you can't find an answer isn't so much the issue. At least you know there is one.
That's fair. That makes complete sense to me.
Turn to a social problem and there's no solution. You're out of luck. And I would find that awful. So stick with this little world where I can solve things and maybe solve things and maybe can't, but yeah.
So what have you been doing since leaving Clemson? We talked about The Hobbit, but what else is going on?
Well, I worked most recently. I've done two stints now on Avatar movies. And so went back to New Zealand once, and more recently, just last year, doing it all remotely. So working on basically water effects. So how do you make waves and how do you make bubbles and things like that that humans can't tell from the real thing? So they're all fake, but they're all done virtually with computer graphics, but you want it to fit certain requirements, but you want it to look and feel real. And so I've been working on that for quite a while. So mostly that.
So when you do something like that, like animating water, for example, is that, does someone else do the animation and then you are working on the light?
No, I do that. So
okay.
It's a combination of mathematics, of the underlying model. So it's a big computational mathematical model. And then on top of that, you have to have the images that it produces that recognize it all. So if I want, I have to have something that looks on my screen for all the world like an ocean with waves. If I can tell the difference between what I see on the screen and what I see is real, then it's not good enough. And so both the mathematics and the computing that's underneath it and the whole model of generating the physics, so there's a bunch of physics involved in it, that all has to come out with images that look real. And so you get in, it's a strange effect on your psyche too, because I remember I was doing a paper once, and I had several papers on generating synthetic clouds. So clouds that look puffy and look like real clouds in the sky. And I put some more up on the screen and looked at them, and I said, I'll never get this right. And I walked outside and looked up in the sky, and I said, oh, wait a minute, it is right. So the physics was actually, that I was using, was actually giving me the right answer and the right look, but I didn't really know what a cloud looked like. I had this mental image of a cloud, but I didn't spend enough time staring at clouds to think, what does that really look like? What is real? And so you get fooled by your own stuff at times. So, but the clouds, things like that, you have to, you have a model from physics that's in computing and mathematics, and that all combines to produce these images. And then you want the images to look real. And it's great fun when they do, but it's a lot of work to get them set up that way.
I'd imagine. So you've had a really interesting career. What would you say is the thing you're most proud of?
Oh, wow. I think the one I makes me feel the best is when I see all the success that all the students have had. Had, as I said, 40 or whatever graduate students I've personally supervised their theses or dissertations. But I taught a whole lot more than that. I mean, I've taught thousands, right? So, for 40 years. It's no surprise. But to see all the things that they've done and success that they've had, it's just been that's the most gratifying thing, is to see, they've gone on and really accomplished things. That's really neat. So having having a really great PhD student, there's just nothing better than that. Because you know they're going to go on and be successful. And do I take credit for that? Sure. Sure. You can tell pretty much when they first arrive that they're going to be successful. So it's just great fun to join in and work with them and have that that legacy, if you will. So they're out there, they're everywhere, and lots of them on the West Coast, of course. And I keep up with some of them, but it's hard. They're very busy, and certainly not all of them.
Yeah. So I've gone through my list of questions I wanted to make sure we touched on, but I always like to end things just by asking, you know, is there anything that you just want to talk about or that we didn't cover, or anything you want to have for posterity?
Well, no, I know Mark has always been interested in the history of computing, and certainly it's no surprise that he's interested in the history of computing at Clemson. So I hope this project all comes together. This is a nice thing for him to be doing and putting the time into this. And he's asked me a bunch of questions along the way, and I wish I could remember things better. But it's been quite a development from a tiny department to where it is now. I couldn't even tell you how many faculty are in there now in the School of Computing, but a lot. And it wasn't all that many way back when.
Yeah, so this is my summer work, you know? Yeah. And so I've only been doing this for about a month. And the things I've learned about this field in general and the history of this field is just incredible, and things I didn't know before. So it's been really beneficial to work on.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Well, it's Mark's a good guy. I don't know if you know our history. He was a student back when I was in the faculty at Duke.
Oh, okay.
See, he was actually a student. He was officially a student of UNC. But UNC and Duke are only separated by a few miles, and the two computer science departments had a joint share courses, share students, share professors agreement going on. And so Mark would come over and take courses at Clemson, or at Duke rather. And so I was a professor at Duke and helping him with his dissertation. His official advisor was Kishore Trivedi, who's a great fellow at Duke. And but I helped Mark with his dissertation there. And then when he graduated, I encouraged him to apply at Clemson, and encouraged our faculty to choose him from among those people who applied. So and I was glad he came. We published, Mark and I published a lot of papers together. So
I noticed that when I was going through your CV this week.
Yep, he's been a great asset, and he's done not just in that research, but he did great work in serving as an associate department chair, or whatever the title is now, and so associate school director, and